no candidate represented a return to fiscal austerity. Like, that is not even on the table. You know, the election's over. I like Chong. You know, my low could dress this in for Halloween. You know, I voted for him. But you know what? Trump loves debt. A couple quotes from Shaw. I'm the king in debt. I'm great with debt. No one knows debt better than me. And then when he raided in the Charlottes, I've made a fortune using debt. If things don't work out, I renegotiate the debt. You go back and say, guess what? To the bank, the economy crashed. I'm going to give you back half. And they take it. So Trump has a history of doubling debt, and MMT tied into Stephanie Kelton. It's modern monetary theory. When in actuality, MMT, magic money tree. Because what they believe is debt doesn't matter. What they is, you need to look at the other side of the equation, the economic growth coming out of the debt spending.
Garrett Goggins, what's going on?
Hey, Andy, how are you doing today? Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's really good to see you and good to have you on. There's so much going on in the world as far as the movements and precious metals, as well as some opportunities into some other things. What I really want to do is we had an event about, let's say the 12th is about a week ago. Let's talk about the event, your thoughts and what it means for the overall economy and what it means for a natural resource portfolio.
Yeah, you know, everyone is, you know, we're happy that, you know, the election's passed, right? There's not a lot of uncertainty there. But there, now we're moving forward to the next stage. Like, you know, what's going to happen under a Trump presidency? And then we've been looking at the data, and there's many things we can talk about. First of all, he's got the Senate, he's got the Congress, he's got the Supreme Court, and the founders right now is kind of against them right now, but that is changing as well. And to be honest with you, like, gold sold off here a little bit due to Trump's tariffs and slowing down the economy. But the first thing to discuss would be the debt ceiling that is going to occur at the turn of the year in January. You know, in previous years, it gets pushed forward with no real resolution. The government keeps spending money. But one of the things that we've seen recently, you know, Stephanie Kelton, yeah, MMT? Oh, you don't. She's a professor of finance at Stony Brook U.
I do.
Yes. Work for the Treasury, for some sort of secretary role. Her MMT theory is picking up steam in the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. And if you notice during the debate, no candidate represented a return to fiscal austerity. Like, that is not even on the table. You know, the election's over. I like Chong. You know, my low could dress this in for Halloween. You know, I voted for him. But you know what? Trump loves debt. A couple quotes from Shaw. I'm the king in debt. I'm great with debt. No one knows debt better than me. And then when he raided in the Charlottes, I've made a fortune using debt. If things don't work out, I renegotiate the debt. You go back and say, guess what? To the bank, the economy crashed. I'm going to give you back half. And they take it. So Trump has a history of doubling debt, and MMT tied into Stephanie Kelton. It's modern monetary theory. When in actuality, MMT, magic money tree. Because what they believe is debt doesn't matter. What they is, you need to look at the other side of the equation, the economic growth coming out of the debt spending. So the amount of debt that you accumulate doesn't matter because it creates economic growth. And now with the government, at some estimates, at 50% of GDP, it's totally dependent on government and government spending. Trump loves that. Both parties are embracing MMT. The debt is going to increase like you've never seen before. And I don't think, I haven't heard this message anywhere. I don't think people are connecting the dots yet. The debt ceiling is probably going to be repealed. We're not even going to have a debt ceiling going into 2025.
So if I can, I agree with everything you said, but I'm going to not push back, but I'm going to push back if that makes sense, just because we need to work this out. Does the debt actually matter? And what I, the context of it, it doesn't seem like it has for the past, what, 40 years. So does it matter now? Why does it matter now?
It's $37 trillion. And, you know, we can talk about the CPI, right? You know, the CPI, you know, whatever, 1%, 2%, 3% a year. You know, I got three little kids. We go food shopping. Food prices are triple what they were 3 years ago. So what the government uses is CPI, where consumers see, you know, the major impact of debt is through the loss of purchasing power in the dollar. And the dollar's lost 98-99% of its value over time. But you know what? It could continue to lose 50% of its value every year in perpetually. The rule to back. It'll never get to zero. It'll just keep losing value. And that's where we see debt impacting us. And we see it every day. Like, you know, remember the tubes of toothpaste that we bought? They were huge. They were like 12 ounces. They lasted a month. Now the tubes are like, you know, 8 ounces or 6 ounces. They last a week and they cost $12 versus $1. That's loss of purchasing power. And that's what we're going to see increasing over the upcoming years with the amount of spending that's coming.
Yeah. No, that's a really good point. And I think, too, also the CPI is just a BS number, because if you look at everything that's included in the CPI, number one, I can't really understand it. And these are always getting moved in and out of it. So,
right. Well, one other thing regarding debt, GDP and debt is that, you know, back in the, you know, years ago, they used to spend a little bit of debt. They used to get a dollar's worth of economic growth, or even levered, like $3 of economic growth for $1 of debt. The U.S. consumers tapped out. They're signing auto loans for, you know, like 80, 90 months. You know, they're just trying to maximize the most out of their budget. The interest costs are through the roof. So right now, you know, the U.S., it loses the amount of money debt that you spend. It loses is the fact pushing growth higher. So, you know, they're going to spend trillions of dollars of debt. They're not going to get trillions of dollars back of GDP. And the more debt you have, the less of GDP growth that you have.
Got it. Okay. So they're going to spend more to begin to stimulate the economy. That's what you're saying here. But it's not going to really stimulate the economy. So let's move into what is the expectation then that you feel like is going to happen in 25 and beyond, as far as
there's going to be a lot of government spending. It's already large. It's going to continue. The debt's going to continue and increase. MMT states debt doesn't matter. It's all about economic grade. The amount of debt outstanding has no relation to inflation. Inflation is when the economy grows beyond its natural bounds, whatever that means. And, you know, it's just continued loss of purchasing power. One other thing is that, you know, the Federal Reserve, Powell's pushing back. He's stating, you know, we might not cut as much. Trump's going to put Judy Shelton back in the Federal Reserve. You know, Judy Shelton, she is a gold bug. He tried to do this back in 2019, but he was voted down. He's likely to do it again. You look at the Treasury Secretary, you know, it's between what Scott was said and John Paulson. You know John Paulson?
The hedge fund manager.
Yeah, John Paulson is the biggest gold bug that there is. He correctly made millions off the subprime mortgage debacle. And he took all those millions and he created a gold fund, the biggest gold fund in the world, Paulson Capital. And he's the most hardcore gold bug I've ever seen. He potentially could be the Treasury Secretary.
Well, that should be music to our ears, if you would, for all the people that are have gold and miners, right?
Yeah. And one other thing, like, yeah, this goes deep. If you look at the Eurozone has been releasing stuff over the past couple years when they are moving to a gold standard based off GDP. Germany, France, Holland have all stated, there's been quotes by the federal official stating, we hope to keep our gold reserves at 4% of GDP. And if you look, you know, the gold purchases over the first half of the year for central banks is, what, 265 tons. It's the largest it's been in decades. That's why, because it's probably going to come out soon that they're going to peg gold reserves to GDP, to economic growth. Germany right now holds 6% of its GDP in gold. France, 8% of its GDP in gold. China is only 1%. They've been adding gold reserves basically on a quarterly basis. U.S., based on their current gold ounces outstanding, 2.4%. So the U.S. has to double their gold reserves in order to match GDP, their current GDP. But the problem with that is, right, the reason you do that is to try to create some sort of monetary standard, right? So it's gold ounces benchmarked to GDP. But you can't have a monetary standard that is based off of GDP. It has to be based off of money supply. You know what I mean? That's the step that they are going to skip and push to the sidelines now that debt doesn't matter. And the only thing that matters is growth. So it's gold to GDP, which is a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
Go ahead. The debt is going to skyrocket because debt doesn't matter anymore. And then we're going to run any issues down the road shortly within a few years.
Okay. So talk to me about, we had this BRICS meeting that was about a month ago. And they're on record, if you would, of trying to get away from the dollar. Talk to me about that. What's your opinion on that? Is that they have legs? And obviously that has big implications for.
Yeah, there's no doubt. You know, the BRICS nations, you know, all their economies are growing. It's now like as large together as the United States, U.S. state. The U.S. Has been pushing their weight around the world using the dollar to fund their, you know, military and stuff like that. So the rest of the world's fed up. There's no doubt that they're reaching a critical mass and forming some sort of, you know, currency unit. They talked about it being pegged, you know, to gold or something like that. But, you know, there's all this smoke everywhere within the BRICS, within the European community. And then where we see that, you know, actions speak louder than words is foreign holdings of the U.S. Treasury was 50% 15 years ago. Now it's down to like 20%.
Right.
Our foreign trade partners don't want to hold U.S. debt. Why? Because they're not compensated for the loss of purchasing power. They're getting 5% a year. Even the dollar is losing 10% a year in value.
Right. It's almost a rhetorical question. Why? Okay, well, let's hear it. Give me some reflections on 24. You came out with a gold price target with me when we talked last. Do you still hold that? Yeah, talk to me again. Some reflections about that, your gold price target.
Yeah, and near 2,400, 2,500,
of course,
higher.
Yeah, and a little higher.
Oh, whatever, 25, 26. But you know, we'll see that. And what my estimate was based on was China demand. You know, and we just saw a large premium in China at that point. We're not seeing a large premium in China anymore. It's basically, you know, trading at the current price that is in the United States. But we're still seeing the China central bank still buy tons of gold, and all the other central banks buy tons of gold. We've moved into a new political era with Trump, and this like resets everything. And you know, either party, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, they're both going to spend bucketfuls of money, you know, and like I said, debt doesn't matter anymore. It's just about, spending to produce economic growth. So like, you know, we've had a sell-off here. People are really emotional about it. Gold's only down 6%. Bitcoin crashed like 60% just like 2 years ago, you know? And Bitcoin's making new highs. Bitcoin basically tracks monetary supply with a little bit of like a 3-month lag. People are getting all amped up about Bitcoin, and people are kind of forgetting about gold. Gold's been our standard of, it's been for thousands of years, you know, it's been the historical goal to maintain your purchasing power. Now people are, you know, saying, oh, Bitcoin's the one, Bitcoin, we're going to move to that. There's talk of the U.S. doing that. But often one of the things is that, this starts getting into a little bit of conspiracy theory, which is fun to talk about and all that stuff. But, you know, World Economic Forum, like Klaus Schwab, right? In the end, we're going to owe nothing, right? We're going to rent our, you know, call it Uber up on your cell phone or a Tesla. It's going to come pick you up. You're not going to own cars. You're not going to own real estate. You're not going to own anything. And the governments and big businesses are going to own everything and control everything. And that's what they want. And Bitcoin fits that agenda. You know what I mean? And it's digital value that is not material. So, you know, I look at it as basically nothing. And the other thing with Bitcoin is, you know, in order to buy and sell your Bitcoin, you have to go through a financial intermediary. Like, they're tracking it. And then you can track Bitcoin based off your IP address and all that. They want you, they want people to use Bitcoin because they can track it. You get a physical address in my Dole, you take it out of the system, you're not tracking that. You know, you can, they don't earn you to spend your money. They don't know that you hold it. And it's, you know, totally off the balance sheet. So your Dole has been a, you know, physical asset that's been a store value in thousands of years. It's going to increase and intensify as that store value as we move forward.
Yeah. It's interesting to note, I don't have the chart in front of me, but I did a chart that recently, that I think going back to 2000, gold has outperformed the S&P, if I'm not mistaken, since for the last 24 years, if I'm not mistaken. So you don't have to go back 2000 years. You can go back 20 years and still see, still you would have made more money. So let's talk about what you see and what you like in the mining sector. That's your wheelhouse here. Anything's new that you're seeing and that you like? Any companies that you see and that you like?
Yeah, sure. But one thing regarding gold and gold stocks that's pertinent to that gold S&P, gold's outperformed over the past 20 years. It's beat the S&P. But the average gold stock, Newmont Baird, they're at the same levels they were 20 years ago. The price was what? 400 now then, and it's 2,500 now, yet their stock prices are the same price they were. And there's like, and people are like, oh, what is a valuation gap? No, these things are fairly valued based off their free cash flow, their profit. Stocks are priced off of, you know, the stream of income over the life of mine, that sort of thing. And there's a, like, it's a hidden metric that I see that is the cancer of the gold mining industry. And I call it a hidden metric because you can't find this metric in many places. I'm lucky enough to have a Bloomberg so I can, you know, put in a price chart, but that I can change price to look at shares outstanding. So dilution, right? For the miners, you gotta watch out for the double Ds, the dilution and the depletion of the mines. But the dilution is a major factor. When miners pay $1 billion for an asset, they spend another $500 million to build it, and they never get their money back in free cash flow. That is direct loss of shareholder value. That's what shares go up, and the earnings per share is basically constant. So therefore, earnings on a per share basis goes down, and the stock price follows. You know, I only follow accretive miners, true wealth generators, legends of the industry that can grow economics on a per share basis and that are focused on growing economics on a per share basis. You look at Coeur Mining. Coeur Mining's with adjusted was $300 a share back in the mid-90s. Now it's at $3. Production has been relatively constant throughout that time. Why is it that? Because they overpay for acquisition. Their shares outstanding have gone up like thousands of percent, and their earnings have been basically the same, but earnings on a per share basis is like 2 cents of 100 cents back 20 years ago. And actually, Poor just acquired Silvercrest Metals, and I'm all over Silvercrest Metals from its inception with Eric Fear and Silvercrest Mining that got bought out by First Majestic Silver in 2015 for $105 million. They spent out Silvercrest Metal. We had free stock spin out at first. It wasn't worth very much, but then they started, you know, high grade draw results in Las Chispas. And then Ford just stepped in and took them out for, I don't know, 1.2, 1.3 bill. But if you look at the cents per share that Silvercrest is expected to generate and the amount of shares Coeur paid for that deal, Coeur's earnings per share is going to go down by 20% because of that acquisition. That is dilution. The share price is going to follow. And then, you know, evaluating miners, right? It's kind of like playing poker, all right? People are bluffing. Everyone's bluffing. All the CEOs are going to tell you everything's great. Everything's wonderful. It's awesome. The shares outstanding is the tell. Like,
yeah,
that's the first or second thing I pull up when I look at a company. I look at how shares outstanding has grown over the past few years. And then I look at the value that they generated. And if a company is raising whatever, $10 million to do a drilling campaign, and all of a sudden you don't hear about results, and they're raising money again the following year to do more drilling, and you never hear about the first drilling they did, that's red flag. That's, you know, a lifestyle company. They don't have much going on. So I'm lucky enough to have that metric, and I follow it very closely.
If I can ask about that, that is my number one question. And I've been to so many conferences throughout my career, if you would, and also on the phone with them, I always ask, how are you protecting me as a shareholder, i.e. what's your position on dilution? And then my second question is, how many shares outstanding do you have currently if you're a junior miner? Do you have a rule of thumb that you want to see with shares outstanding with the junior explorer as well as a small to mid-tier producer? Is there a rule of thumb that you don't too many shares outstanding, if you would?
You know, based on my experience, I don't necessarily use a rule of thumb because each mining company is so different with different sizes. You know, 100 mil for a smaller guy, 400 mil for a larger guy just, you know, comes to mind based off, you know, all the companies I've looked at. But, you know, I just spoke to Rui Franck, CEO of Seabridge Gold, and Seabridge owns KSM. It's a massive gold mine that's going to, you know, cost $7 billion CapEx to build. It's worth like 25 or 20, $26 billion in free cash flow. It's a monster. It's the right time in the right place for the cycle with the gold price and the miners having depletion in their mines of production is falling off a cliff. It's the right time for Seabridge to move. But what really impressed me was the shares outstanding for Seabridge. It only had, it was less than 100 mil. I don't know, 75 mil? Because Rudy was paying like pennies for these deposits, and he generated so much value from them that he was able to maintain his share count and drive significant shareholder value along the way.
Right. Okay. Excellent. So let's go to, do you think, again, you want high quality miners? Do you think these are going to start, is 25 their year is what I'm trying to
say. You know, I would think so. So, you know, I write the Gold Portfolio newsletter, so I'm pretty attuned to, and I'm on Twitter a lot, so I'm pretty attuned to, you know, retail investors and how they're feeling and money flows and stuff like that. And the money's not here yet. Like, a company, Awali Resources, right? They operate the CDI. They released some of the most amazing drill results I've seen in decades. Like, results of 20 or 50 grams of ton at Odeon, at their Charger deposit, and then lower stuff at BBN. But this is a small cap explorer that trades for $25 million. And then once the hybrid drilling results start, they continue for years, right? So you get lucky with your first drill hole, then they kind of figure out where the deposit is, and then the drills start defining the resource, getting tighter and tighter with better drill results and defining a resource. And then if we were even close to a speculative frenzy, this company would be going through the roof. And they had good drill results 6 months ago, stock went up, sold off. Now, and then they just have the same new drill results of the same, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 gram a ton material, which is amazing. And the stock isn't even back to where it was 6 months ago.
Yeah. Nobody's
winning. Or in like a significant euphoria phase, this company would be 10x higher in a week.
Yeah. Got it. So a lot of room, you're not too late, a lot of room to run.
All right.
So give me some more thoughts on 25. What are your expectations here going into the new year here?
I don't think people are prepared for the amount of liquidity that's going to be coming into the system. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't matter anymore. The spending's going to go through a roof. You know, people think Trump's going to cut spending. Yeah, he's going to cut some departments and stuff like that. And it's interesting getting Kennedy in there too, right? With the FDA and all that.
55.
But, you know, the spending.
Raw milk.
What?
Raw milk.
Well, yeah. And, you know, it's just, it's kind of like we're getting back to what's real, right? Because over the past, 4 to 8 years, we can't even define, and men have babies. You ask a guy, dear wife, whoa, no. It's like a simple answer. No, men can't have babies, but have babies. And Kennedy is getting back to the, the roots of our, a nutritional system. And he's, we need real food. We need sunlight, we need exercise, We need to cut down the sugar. We're going to cut fluoride from the water. Like, stuff that's been they denied it for years that they were doing it. And then all of a sudden, it's a conspiracy theory. Now it's conspiracy fact. And the same thing is going to happen with the monetary system. Trump is bringing in all these people to bring, America back to its golden age.
Yeah. And you think that will happen? I mean, obviously they're going to be spending a lot, but think he's going to be successful in that?
He's going to try to, they're going to be spending a tremendous amount of money, but the loss of purchasing power is going to continue. I think it's going to get America back in the same direction, but major issue on the table, the amount of debt outstanding, is not being addressed at all. It's not even a concern, and it should be one of the first topics of the debate.
Yeah. So if you would, drop a few names that you really like. I know last time we spoke and you dropped some royalty companies, if you would. Just drop a few names that you like, and then if people want to do business with you, your services, how do they do that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, Origin did well. Origin holds a 1% NSR in Silicon Merlin. I found out about Silicon Merlin because I was going through Anglo Gold, drilling results. They were in some back page of an economic report. The market was unaware of it. Origin's ramped up very nicely since then. In one of my products, the Golden Portfolio, the, flagship product, it's based off the royalties. The royalties are the best way to play gold. Year in, are the golds going up or going down? Stick with the royalties, because the royalties, they can grow accretively because their costs are fixed. They have limited overhead with 5 or 6 employees. They have a free option for exploration upside. And as gold goes higher, their margins and profits just ramp higher and higher and higher. It's amazing.
It's huge fair. Huge royalty companies.
And then, one of the companies that in one of my other products, the GP10X, the smaller explorers, developers, and miners that are more volatile, that have a chance of going up 10X when gold really ramps, in a year like this. Montage Gold, it's in West Africa, and Wheaton Precious just came in. They took down their whole CapEx of $560 million with the gold streams. And then Rio 2 with Alex Black. Alex Black founded Rio Alto, and it was taken over by Tahoe, later acquired by Pan American. Wheaton Precious came in and funded Alex's whole deal too. And Rio 2 is an interesting company. Alex Black is a value creator. They've got this, oxide heat bleach and chilies. And it's run of mill. Run of mill means basically you take a shovel, you dig some dirt, and you throw it on the heat bleach, and that's all you got to do. There's no processing, there's no crushing, there's no nothings. And his economic study on Rio 2 is only like the first stage of 20,000 tons per day. This thing scales to 80,000 tons per day. So whatever economic reports you're looking at, double them by 4 for Rio 2. And those are the opportunities. Oh, and one of the things about Rio 2, I really love companies that are able to bootstrap into production as opposed to spending $1 billion for CapEx up front. It's low. They got to dilute. They got to sell these shares. They got, owners, lending terms. It takes them 5-10 years to get their money back. Whereas bootstrapping, spend $100 million to start a small operation, 20,000 tons a day. You start using free cash flow from the operation to fund the growth of 40K to 60K to 80K. So it takes longer, but it's stair-stepped. And then that avoids the dilution because it's
consider. Yes.
Yeah. So, those are the companies that I really, really love. And like I said, it's like poker, right? Every company's going to, have to say that they're the best, they did the best project. But, I've been doing this 15 years and I know the things to look for that really drive growth. The GDX right now is only up 50%. My Golden Portfolio is up 25%. That's like, the Golden Portfolio is like watching paint dry, but it's like 24 karat gold paint. it's slow and it's boring, but it like gets the job done year after year. Like 10X, is that a great year so far? You know, it's up 40% versus the GDX, only 15%. And then I've got a GPIV, you know, well, containing four of my top picks. GPIV is up 145% year to date. These things have rocked. And that's my introductory product to the Golden Portfolio. So I'll provide the leverage. And then I was just looking, I was modeling one of my companies based off the gold price. And I'm like, all right, so, you know, I've got my NAV forecast. And if gold goes from 2,000 to 2,500, that's a 25% increase. The value of the underlying mine goes up 100%.
For better winter.
Okay. That's the value. So even though gold is guarded higher, the value being created in the gold miners, their stock prices have not kept up with the value being created by the higher gold price. And that's another reason why I know the retail investor is, well, I mean, nowhere even close. And just the, you know, the opportunities I see, people ask me, you know, oh, this stock's up, one of your GP10 is up 150% year to date. It's done great. You know, should I sell it? Like, whoa. Like, these companies have intrinsic things going on. You don't sell NVIDIA, right? You hang on to it because it's a leader of the industries. And then the gold price rising from, you know, 2,000 to 2,700 creates more underlying value. So, you know, the value, you know, my target prices are adjusted much higher. So even though it's gone up 150%, it's still probably 75% undervalued based on where it should be. And that's another reason why I know that we are a long way from euphoria.
Excellent. You're right. How can people find you? I know you're on Twitter. I follow you on Twitter, retweet your stuff, but how can people find you and they want to do business with you?
Go to my website, goldenportfolio.com, sign up for my free Secrets of a Mining Analyst Masterclass, and you'll get 10 emails about what I look for in the miners and, you know, an opportunity sign up for my products.
Excellent. Derek, I want to thank you so much. I'll put all of this info in the show notes below this video and on the podcast on Spotify and Apple. Really appreciate your time.
Good. Thank you, Andy.
Thank you.